One of the leftovers from last year in Congress is a comprehensive energy package. It passed the House, but failed by 2 votes in the Senate. The Senate now has a mini version of the bill. It's been shorn of more than half its provisions and much of its cost. One thing removed is a liability waiver for makers of the polluting fuel additive MTBE. That's a key provision for House Republican leader Tom DeLay, who has MTBE makers in his suburban Houston district. Last week, DeLay said the House would not vote on the new bill. That slowed action in the Senate as well. And that's renewed questions about how much power Tom DeLay has and why. NPR's Andrea Seabrook has this profile.
He's known for his artful and prodigious fundraising. He's known for his sharply partisan tongue. But what may be less obvious is that Tom DeLay's position in the House leadership, one step below the Speaker, has become the chamber's de facto seat of power. Here's how DeLay himself describes his working relationship with House Speaker Dennis Hastert.
The Speaker is sort of like the chairman of the board, and I'm the CEO. The Speaker looks at the big picture, makes the final decisions. I sort of run the operation.
The dynamic between these two is unusual, if not unprecedented, and it's already being picked apart by historians. Barbara Sinclair teaches American politics at UCLA.
During most of the 20th century, the Speaker was clearly number one, and the majority leader was clearly number two, and if it came down to a decision or a conflict, it was the Speaker's view that prevailed. And it does seem to be the case that with Hastert and DeLay, they're much more equally influential than has usually been the case.
The energy bill is a good example. The $31 billion version that passed the House last year came very close in the Senate. By most accounts, it would have become law, but for the provision shielding MTBE producers from lawsuits. DeLay wouldn't drop the provision, not even when Vice President Cheney and Energy Secretary Spencer Abraham tried to get him to deal. It's that unflinching determination in the face of opposition that's made DeLay a celebrity among conservatives and a role model for young Republicans. DeLay's speech at last year's College Republican National Convention drew a record audience. He was introduced by Washington lobbyist Jack Abramoff.
He was the most effective whip in the House of Representatives, and I would say he's the most effective majority leader, and thank God Tom DeLay is the majority leader in the House. Tom DeLay is who all of us want to be when we grow up.
To understand Tom DeLay's power in the House of Representatives, you have to look at how he came into the leadership there. DeLay was first elected to the House in 1984. He had served several terms in the Texas legislature and was known there as Tom DeReg for his frequent attacks on government regulation of business. He continued that work on the federal level, though at the time Republicans were in the minority. DeLay was not part of Newt Gingrich's core group of conservative rebels in the House, men who spent a lot of time on floor speeches and media interviews. Instead, Tom DeLay built his own base of support among business leaders and fellow Republicans. Ron Peters is a political science professor at the University of Oklahoma.
In the lead-up to the 1994 election, DeLay traveled around the country. He contributed to the campaigns of many of the challenging Republicans. So when they won and took over the House, DeLay decided that he was going to run for whip, and he was not Gingrich's first choice.
Gingrich became the Speaker of the House and hand-picked the others in leadership. But DeLay ran against and beat a close Gingrich ally for the position of whip. The loyalty DeLay had built up among the newly elected Republicans paid off. With Gingrich as Speaker, the 104th Congress passed a raft of new laws they called their Contract with America. DeLay made a lot of that happen. He was the whip, but they called him the hammer. And all the while, he was still building up his own fundraising operation outside the leadership structure. Political scientist Ron Peters.
So he became sort of a capo regime. He became sort of a subordinate leader who had his own following inside the Republican conference.
During this period, DeLay chose as his chief deputy another conservative who also had no ties to Gingrich. He was Illinois Republican Dennis Hastert. DeLay mentored Hastert, working closely with him. It was a time of frequent disagreements among House leaders. There was even an attempted revolt against Gingrich in the summer of 1997. DeLay's role in that revolt has never been clear, but he kept his job as whip because he'd kept that base of support among Republican rank-and-file members. Then came 1998 and the impeachment of President Bill Clinton. DeLay pressed for impeachment relentlessly and was stunned when, in the middle of those proceedings, Republicans lost seats in that November's elections. Rank-and-file Republicans were also stunned and angry, and they blamed Gingrich. Within days, the Speaker stepped down. DeLay's supporters urged him to run for the Speaker's job. Tom DeLay.
I thought about running for Speaker when Newt Gingrich stepped aside. It wasn't my time for many different reasons. I was nuclear at the time. It was during impeachment. It's probably and undoubtedly not what our conference needed at the time. And there were many other reasons why I didn't run for Speaker.
For a brief moment, the job fell to Bob Livingston, then chairman of the Appropriations Committee. But later that same day, Livingston became the subject of an infidelity expose and withdrew. Still, DeLay didn't make a move for the Speaker's job.
I'd already made up my mind about that when it all sort of fell apart when Bob Livingston walked out on the floor and said he wasn't going to run for Speaker, and then we had to decide who was going to be Speaker, and we settled on Denny Hastert.
With that, Hastert vaulted over his old boss and also over then-majority leader Dick Armey of Texas and into the speakership. When Armey retired, DeLay moved into the number two job and installed another of his deputies as whip, Roy Blunt of Missouri. Again, political scientist Ron Peters.
And so now you have DeLay, you know, sandwiched in effect between Hastert, who's the Speaker, and Blunt, who's the whip, and yet it's DeLay who had been, in a sense, primarily responsible for moving both of those guys into the positions that they now hold.
In the words of one Republican congressman, today's House leadership has DeLay's footprints all over it. When it comes down to a legislative crunch, as in the energy bill, it is DeLay's point of view that leads the entire group of House Republicans. Here is how DeLay describes his current relationship with Speaker Hastert.
We haven't changed much from the days when the Speaker was my chief deputy whip. We've always worked together a lot in partnership. This is probably the most cohesive leadership that we've ever had, and it works very well.
Late last year, Speaker Hastert announced he would seek one more term as Speaker, leaving open the possibility that DeLay would finally move into the Speaker's job after 2006. In the past couple of years, DeLay has shored up his support among the Republicans he leads. In election years, he campaigns for them tirelessly, and he controls a network of fundraising organizations that supplies money to incumbents and Republican challengers all over the country. DeLay's ambitious fight to draw new district lines in Texas is expected to send as many as 6 or 7 new Republicans to the House, all of whom would owe their jobs in large measure to Tom DeLay. Andrea Seabrook, NPR News, Washington.